Sue, will you just tell us what you gave us here, our request? So, and I really appreciate all the members read this kind of material, because this is the kind of information that we need to have and must understand to make intelligent decisions after May 14th.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, I've distributed for you some documents that I've mentioned in my presentation yesterday, and that is there's the audit report from the Secretary of State's Audit Division on the Database Initiative Project. There's also what's called a management letter, which relates to that project. It's the letter dated June 12, 2000, to the superintendent. And what I thought is I'd just get those to you today so you could read them, and then when the department gets to that part in its presentation where it's talking about this project and giving you an update on its status, that we could talk about the findings in the audit report and the management letter. And there are also two other letters, management letters, that I've distributed for you. The one that's probably of most interest would be on the audits division's letter for potential audit areas in the Department of Education, and that covers a number of subjects. And again, I thought you could take your time and read that, and come back with questions, and we could talk about those at the appropriate time.
Sue, I see that letter. As it says, as you know, the Oregon Audits Division has been conducting some preliminary planning work for audits and departments that are scheduled to start this year. This is dated September 14, 2000. Do they mean starting in 2001 or still going to start in 2000?
Mr. Chair, I'll have to clarify that with them and find out whether they're operating on a calendar year in this letter or a fiscal year, and I'll get back to you on that. So, unless the members have any questions on this, I'd like to invite Dave Fazier back up to finish his presentation on the governor's budget.
Okay. Dave, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. For the record, I'm Dave Fazier from the Department of Administrative Services Budget Management Division, and I'd like to continue the presentation of the governor's recommended budget for the grant and aid program for Department of Education. I would like to inform the subcommittee that after yesterday's meeting, I have been duly advised that there is no such thing as a governor's rec budget or any potential infinitive after that. So
that's spelled REC.
Is it
as recommended?
There is a governor's recommended budget.
Okay, we'll allow that.
Again, I'll be following the handout in that looks like this, entitled Grant and Aid Programs. And again, the purpose of this paper presentation is to be able to give you enough information ready at hand in case you need to discuss some of the programs. Again, for your purview, page 2 gives you consolidated budget information that we see in the budget system. I'll transition to page 3 very quickly to show you the grant and aid program overall based on the general, other, and federal funds split. You can see that the federal funds comprise the vast majority of the grant and aid program, general funds slightly less than one-third of the $797.2 million total.
Dave, do you know just offhand how those federal funds have increased over the last couple of bienniums? I mean, that's a very big piece today, 71%. Is that typical of what it has been in days gone by?
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the federal piece of the grant and aid programs has increased substantially over the last two biennium, and given the president's 2002 budget, looks like it'll continue to increase. To many representing a fulfillment of a promise from the federal government to fund programs that they had started either fully or to a certain percentage.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Continuing on page 4.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
just think it's nice that we have the president who's committed to children.
Yes, no child shall be left behind.
Right.
We'll give him a chance to prove that. Not he says.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator.
I noticed that there's a slight decrease in this budget, 0.3%, I guess. Is that in the general fund part? The federal funds, I would think, would be growing rather than decreasing, so.
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, you're referring to the 0.3 reduction of the governor's recommended budget from the legislatively approved budget?
And the current service level.
Yeah, I guess it's just from the legislative.
It is.
It's not a decrease over last time.
No, in that it is primarily focused in the other funds, fund type. We phased out grant and aid of approximately $41 million of funds that were transferred to school districts. I believe that was Senate Bill 622 revenues.
That accounts for it.
And we discussed a couple of these items yesterday that were related to grant and aid, but I discussed them in the department ops presentation also. The recommended budget does provide for expansion of the Oregon pre-kindergarten program towards a goal of 60% service level, provides statewide resources to schools for dropout prevention and teacher administrator mentor programs.
Mr. Chair, I was making my gesture and my thumbs up. And
all right.
Reverend Schrader, of course, was looking at the numbers, but I think those who know that when I returned back to this building, that I was very concerned. I think we were at 48%, and very, very concerned, because I was here when we first started some of the Head Start programs and was dismayed that we were so lagging behind. And so I'm just kind of pleased to see that the governor has put in, we'll at least be at 60%.
Right.
That's an improvement over where we were last session.
And Dave, when we speak of Oregon pre-kindergarten program, that's synonymous with Head Start?
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, the two programs actually are separately funded. Oregon pre-kindergarten program is the state's program funded with general fund. Head Start is the federal program funded with federal dollars, and I would say that we all have the pleasure of living in a state where we had a vision of combining those programs to make sure that they were seamless to get the greatest leverage from both of those programs. So by statute, both of them operate seamlessly. We provide a general fund contribution to what the feds already have given us to expand to more children and provide greater quality improvements in the service provision.
And the governor's recommended budget calls for 60% funding of Head Start for those that are eligible?
Yes, that's
also
correct.
Same as
the governor's recommended budget provides additional general funds with the anticipated federal Head Start funds that were expected back in November of last year to move us towards a goal of 60% service level.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
A question. Have you any indication, or does the agency, department have any indication of how much of dollars are going to be increased by the federal government? Because I understand that there's going to be a substantial increase for Head Start coming from the Bush administration.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, members of the subcommittee, based on the President's 2002 budget, I don't have that information, but I anticipate that there would be additional dollars, and perhaps Department of Ed during their presentations might be able to add a little clarity to that.
Right, and I think you and or Sue said yesterday that we'll have, when the governor did his recommended budget, he didn't have access to funds, federal funds that have come to the department since the introduction of his recommended budget. So there's a lot of, I don't know if that's a lot in terms of amount, but there are a number of federal funds that we haven't accounted for in the governor's budget.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and specifically related to Head Start, we know that we will be receiving an additional $2 million as of the president's,
right,
or the approved 2001 federal budget. We know that they're going to be targeted towards more towards quality improvements rather than expansion of service level. There are some other unique requirements that I'm sure the department will get into in describing the considerations for the use of those funds programmatically as well as budgetarily.
Senator Tro, do you have a question?
I think Representative Winters got my question.
Okay. Representative Schrader?
Just, I thought I had heard that with the combination of Oregon Pre-K and Head Start, that the federal aspect of that program had some conditions that made it not quite as cost-effective as the Pre-K, and there was some discussion about that in terms of being able to deliver better service, perhaps under our more tailored program. At least that was the view of some. Is that an accurate reflection of some of the discussion, or?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, as all programs should do, they should always be looking at what the cost effectiveness is of the program the way it's currently set up. The governor has identified for his recommended budget some criteria around the use of the additional funding for pre-kindergarten programs, entailing looking at the overall implementation, use of the funds, the effectiveness of those funds. In other words, can we leverage greater service levels within existing dollars first before we then look at how much we would actually expand the program with those new dollars? And that's why I think in every representation of service level for these programs, for the 2001-2003 biennium, you see the words towards a goal of 60%. It could be that we get more, could be maybe a little bit less, but we know that the $5.9 million that was in the governor's recommended budget is less than $900,000, almost $1 million less than what the department asked for. That is a catalyst for them to look at how they implement the program, to still maintain a focus on a 60% service level, but see how we can economize program costs to expand to 60% with less dollars. On the federal fund side, the governor's staff is engaging in discussions with Region 10 to see what kind of flexibility we have in the use of the dollars that we have now. And I think that's a very productive discussion, particularly given federal precedent in use of federal dollars in relation to waivers and other flexibilities in the last 10 or 15 years. Some of that flexibility could reasonably be expected to be looked at and granted in the education dollars also.
Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Continuing in the vein of concentrating on specific numbers, the grant and aid program is very, very complex. I've chosen to make a couple of color slides that will help you get your arms around the relative size of the programs in the grant and aid program. Slide number 5 is a representation of total funds, that is general, other, and federal, and you'll see that the largest programs there are Title I, Special Education, and Nutrition. An associated document that will help you see the exact detail of the programs that have been consolidated in those pie charts has also been handed out to you and is entitled Oregon Department of Education Grant and Aid Programs, and looks like this. So this will give you all the detail that you need for any programs that you don't see detail for on the chart. In addition to the representation of total funds, on page 6 I've also done a graph breakout in color showing general funds specifically. So you'll be able to see the relative differences and composition of general funds in the grant and aid program. And you can see that early intervention, Oregon pre-kindergarten, and regional programs make up the bulk of the general fund in the grant and aid programs. Continuing on to page 7, grant and aid programs are all district grant funds, special payments, no personal services, no S&S, no capital outlay, and that's all page 7 is attempting to communicate. As with the presentation yesterday, page 8 does summarize some of the emergency board activity related to the grant and aid program. Be happy to answer any questions if you have those. I didn't want to go over each one of them. And then page 9, some significant current service level budget adjustments. Again, these are just the significant ones we thought would be useful for you to know about. The Oregon pre-kindergarten program roll-up, that is to maintain a full biennium of 50% service level, considering the federal Head Start funds that we expected at the time was $10.4 million. We discussed yesterday the Oregon Public Education Network, that is a grant and aid program. Not department operations, and it is $2.25 million, and we transferred that over from state school fund budget decision unit. We also spoke of structure of the intellect program. It is a grant and aid program, not a department ops program. The behavioral analysis program, $200,000, was phased out. That study was completed. Senate Bill 725 provided $200,000 for community arts, no provisions for continuing funding. And likewise, the American Sports Education program was phased out in the amount of $50,000. As we discussed yesterday, the Database Initiative Project phased out $700,000 also. Inflation and grant and aid and state government service charges changes amounted to $6 million, and mandated caseload for early intervention, early childhood special education was approximately $8.5 million.
Chair.
Yes, Senator.
With the Database Initiative Project phase out of that $700,000 general fund, are we spending more money on that program this year, the Database Initiative, or not?
Mr. Chair,
anything else that it's in the budget?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, we're not spending more money on the basic database initiative project. We have phased out dollars in relation to that. There is a data integrity assurance policy package, which some consider to be an extension of the needs of the database project, as particularly as they relate to school districts, and that's $10.5 million, and that would represent an increase.
So we're phasing this out, but then there's this other package, it costs $10 million something.
Yes, Senator Trow, this amount is our estimate of what the decrease in costs related to the statewide implementation of the database initiative were that we could phase out safely, and we anticipate there will be more phase outs next biennium.
What does the $10 million buy, sort of?
Senator Hartung, Senator Trow, I'm wondering, since the Department of Ed is just about ready to get up and start talking about that issue, whether I could we could have them answer that question when they come up.
Just a couple words, an expansion of what?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, the Data Integrity Assurance Policy Package funds several specific activities that will ensure that school districts can provide us quality data. They have the capability to provide data to us in a timely fashion. There's a quality assurance process that's going to be established within the Data Integrity Assurance Program Option Package. And also, there is a initiative to standardize student record forms so that they are easily transportable. In effect, what the Data Integrity Assurance does is, after you've implemented the functionality statewide, you have and you look at all of the remaining requirements to make this fully functional. You have some additional costs helping school districts.
Facilitation costs.
We would look at it as a statewide facilitation, but they are school district costs that need to be incurred. The superintendent of public instruction talked about that yesterday, and also when you look at the ability of the database project, what its functionality is, you look at it and you say, okay, if we could just do this, we didn't anticipate these costs, but we have a little more development, a little more hardware, a little more software, and in particular, developing the standardized student record form, I think is going to be very, very useful to all the school districts and to the policymakers in the state. That's more than a few words, Senator Trow.
Thank you. That helps.
And I'm sure they'll be a lot more elaborate when the Department of Ed comes up. On page 10 of the presentation, you'll see a summary of the policy package related to grant and aid program. In particular, the 090 package is program reduction packages that we negotiated during the final governor's recommended budget. It included a general fund reduction of $5.5 million for regional programs, $605,000 reduction in the Together for Children program, which had been operated separately but somewhat consistently with Federal Head Start and Oregon Pre-Kindergarten. What we did was phased that out in light of the Oregon Children's Plan initiative, and then treated the Oregon Pre-Kindergarten program as just one piece, so we didn't have this program sticking out. And the early intervention, early childhood special education, we anticipated additional Medicaid match that we could get for this program that would reduce general fund requirements by about $200,000. We've discussed package 301, the pre-kindergarten program, and the other two programs. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have on that. And finally, page 11, there are revenue changes, federal revenue changes, which we're all aware of, and we'll talk more specifics on in the next week or so. And I've highlighted the new programs and the governor's investments there. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to open up to any questions.
Questions for Dave? Guess not for the moment, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and now, what about Kristen? Yeah, Mr. Broom, welcome.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Chris Durham. I'm Director of Management Services at the Department of Education. I'm here to give you a budget overview and lead you through the journey through the Department of Education budget within the next 2 to 3 weeks. I've handed out to you today a couple inserts into some documents that we will be referring to. The first one I'd like you to draw your attention to is a proposed schedule or agenda, a one-page document. If you could locate that, I'd like to walk you through it so you can see what you can expect and when. We'll be making various presentations to include everything that, you would like covered. If you've located that today, you've heard from Dave Fager Das. I'll be giving a budget overview from the department's perspective, and also be giving a technology report that's been requested by staff, and David Reich will be joining me a little later excuse me, in that report. Then next week, we're planning to present to you a school improvement set of program option packages that Superintendent Bunn has referred to, and there'll be a couple associate superintendents presenting those, including the low-performing schools, dropout prevention, and teacher-administrator-mentor programs. Then Tuesday, we would be presenting the Office of Professional Technical. And I'd like to mention that each of the associates will be appearing before you and discussing their individual programs and grants that they administer and their internal operations. Then following on Wednesday, Office of Curriculum Instruction and Field Services, we call that CIFS. If I refer to that, I'm sorry, rather than using the full name once in a while, and that will be Joanne Flint. And Thursday, the Office of Student Services, Merced Flores, Nina McClanahan, and Joyce Doherty. Of interest there particularly is the Oregon pre-kindergarten program is under that office, and then a multitude of federal funds are under student services. We're hoping like to invite you the following Monday, the 23rd, to make a field trip to one of our two schools, blind or deaf school, right in Salem. The School for the Blind is the closest. We would be providing transportation. We'd love for you to be able to make a field trip if that's within your plans. We would follow that on Tuesday with the Office of Special Education, which would include, obviously, the special schools and also our grant and aid programs, where the multitude of our general fund dollars and the high number of federal dollars in grants are managed. Then,
is that where we might get a discussion of the funding for the DARTS education program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, that is correct.
Excuse me, I didn't. The DARTS program?
Yeah, the DARTS education program.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, Representative Hobson, we refer to those in our budget as long-term care and treatment programs. That is another term for a portion of those programs, but the overall umbrella for us that you'll see referred to is long-term care and treatment programs. Mm-hmm. And of course, we only provide the educational portion of those programs. Then Wednesday, the 25th, the Office of Assessment, we hope to be able to give you information on how the new testing, which is called the Technology Enhanced Student Assessment System, TESA, is being implemented probably as we speak then, and seeing how that is progressing. Then the 26th, the Thursday, the Database Initiative Report, which has been mentioned, and also the Data Integrity Report, which Senator Trow was asking about earlier, and we'll have a complete report on both of those. And then following that, discussions on the state school fund. I'd like to acquaint you with the budget materials that we provided. There are two notebooks. One is the printed governor's budget for the Department of Education. Generally, we will not be referring to that necessarily, but I can certainly make any cross-references that you may want. And then the other book is the blue one, entitled, we call it a briefing document, where I've tried to tailor a document a little easier for you to get through. And I have tabs for each of the offices that you'll be hearing from. Each of the offices likely will have inserts for you, so everything you will receive will be three-hole punched, and you can place in the appropriate tab if you so choose. And I hope to be referring to that document the rest of the way. The today's presentation, I'll be referring to the blue book, and if you wouldn't mind referring to page 2 to give you, and some of this may be a little repetitive from what your staff and DAS have provided, and if you say so, I will proceed on without repeating what you've already heard, but I wanted to suggest to you the five major elements of the department's budget. When you say Department of Education, you're talking about grants that we give to school districts and contractors for programs such as the pre-kindergarten program, the special schools, blind and deaf, which we operate, residential programs, we have students residing there, youth corrections educational program. Those are programs operated by Oregon Youth Authority, but we provide the educational services through contracts with educational institutions, districts, and ESDs. Of course, the state school fund, and finally, the department operations, which are the headquarters operations in the public service building in Salem.
That's true.
Yes, sure.
I don't see a discussion here of ESDs. Do we get that someplace else, or is that in your budget? Education service districts and what they do.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trowe, that would likely come under the discussion of the state school fund with funding that would flow through to the education service district. So that could be brought up and discussed, I would propose, later when we talk about the state school fund.
Okay. Will there be a time when ESDs will be front and center to talk about when we do that?
I think that Mr. Fager has a response to that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trowe, we're detailing out with legislative fiscal the state school fund presentations now, and if there is time, I'm sure we can fit something in related to ESDs. I know that there are several bills related to ESDs this
yeah,
session
that
would be appropriate to discuss.
Mm-hmm. And they provide a lot of services depending on where you are in the state, though, don't they, and for the public schools. So.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Trowe, ESDs, there is no standard ESD. They all respond to the local geographic requirements of K-12 school districts.
But for special education, for instance, it used to be at least that the ESDs in rural Oregon provide a lot of those services. Do they still do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trowe, that is true.
Yeah, so we'll have a discussion on that.
Right, and Dave and Chris, it is important that we spend whatever time is necessary to get an understanding, because the ESDs have spent a lot of time during the interim on redistricting and their financial program, so we do need to spend time on that.
Thank you for letting us know that. Mr. Chair, we'll prioritize the schedule.
Thank you.
Continuing then on that same page, I'd like to give you a sense for how the department is funded. We are heavily involved with federal fund support, and has been mentioned several times, we're expecting that to increase, and we know of increases for next year. The amount of increases for the following year are, of course, up for Congress review. The President has just submitted his budget. But our grants, we have a high proportion of federal funds, and we also do, of course, some general funds in our grants. The special schools are primarily a general funded operation, blind and deaf school. Youth corrections is funded as if it were a school district out of the state school fund with a weighting factor of 2. And, of course, the state school fund, general fund, and a mixture of lottery and other funds. And department operations is a mix of all funds. And we have a very complex funding structure and accounting structure to account for the multitude of funding that we have.
Chris, Chris, is your USDA, the food funding for nutrition? And
Senator Hartung, Representative Winters, yes, the USDA is the operates the funds the child nutrition program, which is a major dollar program for the department. On page 3, I have some highlights of what our major grant programs are. Special education, $143 million, is the largest general fund program, including early intervention, early childhood special education, our regional programs, the programs for the long-term care and treatment that was mentioned earlier, and the hospital programs. And then next, the Oregon pre-kindergarten of almost $64 million is where the general fund grants are.
Yes, sir.
Those programs classified regional programs for the disadvantaged. Are those the ones managed by the SD or some of them or not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tro, it's a mixture of school district and education service districts, with more of the providers being ESDs, but there are a couple of school districts involved there as well.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Representative Schrader.
When it's appropriate in the presentation, I'd like to hear a little bit more about the early intervention, early childhood, and how it relates to Healthy Start, Great Start, and all those, or does not, you know, the uniqueness, the ability to coordinate, the inability, that sort of thing, that's appropriate.
Mr. Chair, Senator, Representative Schrader, we will do. I have a person that's keeping track of every question that you're asking so that we can be sure to come back with the answers at the appropriate time. And you'll notice special ed, that would be the time a few days in the future we'd hope to cover that. Federal funds, special ed is the largest federal fund, funding some of those same programs that I mentioned, the general fund. And there's also what's called compensatory education, commonly referred to as Title I, a large program, and then there's a migrant program related to that. Child nutrition, $183 million. School lunch, breakfast, milk, and then a child and adult care food program. And of course, a commodities program. Then there's a continuation of an expansion of class size reduction program. It was new a year or so ago, and we have word that it will be expanding this next year to the tune of at least $31.7 million. Perhaps greater the second year of the buy-in, which we don't know yet. And then a new grant, a school renovation grant of about $19 million we're projecting for facilities. And there's very little known about that grant as far as from the federal government. The U.S. office has not written regulations yet, and they're just relying on the law. And, of course, statewide, $19 million for a biennium is not very much money when you're talking about maintaining, or not maintaining, but improving facilities. But we gladly will receive that. The special schools are primarily general fund, $16.7 million, with some other funds which represent billings from the school district to county school funds for children placed from those counties, and some federal funds. Youth corrections, I mentioned, is the state school fund, and we receive about $3 million of federal, which is primarily special education. Approximately 50% of the students in the youth corrections education program are special ed eligible. Department operations, $50 million, or a little more than half of our operating costs is general fund, about 10% other funds, and federal represents about 36%. There obviously are strings attached to federal funds. We try to the maximum extent to use those funds in a way that's compatible with the purposes that we're trying to, the school reform efforts. But there are some restrictions, and we'll be getting into that when we talk about federal funds in more detail, and the state school fund, which you've heard of. The next couple, three pages, 4, 5, 6, 7, are what I would like to refer to as a snapshot of the department's budget, a summary where I think you can find sufficient detail to help you understand our budget. With the first section in bold print, and then at each bold name on the left column represents the change between the major programs, with department operations first, and it includes a summary of our total budget by fund, the packages that are included therein, the phase-ins and outs, and we'll be going through those as we go through the offices, the special schools are listed there. The next page, page 5, includes youth corrections. And then on page 5, beginning there and continuing on through 6, are our grant programs. We have a column, chosen to present it in this way, in that we have new information that was not available when the governor put his budget together. The right-hand column is the governor's recommended budget, but you'll see down on the bottom of page 5, I have another column inserted. And these are instances where we have realized that there are additional revenues coming to us, and we thought to portray a more accurate picture, I'm presenting that number as the expected revenue rather than what necessarily is in the governor's budget. And at the end, then, I have a net figure of additional limitation we would need if that revenue is fulfilled and for us to spend that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is that that center column, if you will, to the left of the governor's rec budget?
That's correct.
So the total new revenue anticipated grant made is $88 million?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shreve, that's correct.
I don't know.
If I could direct your attention to a few graphs, somewhat similar to Mr. Fager's graph, but on page 8, this is the department's budget, including all funds and all budget categories. To put in perspective how large the state school fund is, of course, and there are grants. Grants and aid are $797 million. Schools of Blind and Deaf, 20. Youth Corrections, 28. And Department Operations, 92. Just to give you a sense of the total budget of $6.2 billion overall. The graph on page 9 represents everything in general funds except the state school fund. And you can see the largest here by far is grants to the school districts and our contractors of $215 million approximately, operations $51 million, and special schools about $17 million. Graph on page 10 represents our grants in with all funds to show that our grants are about 71% or $568 million federal, and general fund are $215. So our grant activity is proportional. Federal is very heavy. The graph on page 11 gives you a distribution of our grants, the major grants by office, and it's all funds. You can see special education is the single largest with the federal compensatory education, followed then by the child nutrition and kindergarten and vocational grants, just to give you a little perspective on the magnitude. The graph bar chart on page 12 puts into perspective the general fund grants only, with the largest being the abbreviation EIECSC, which is the Early Intervention, Early Childhood Special Education, is the single largest, with pre-kindergarten to the right of that, and then regional programs and long-term care. Graph on page 13 is looking at only the department operations. Give you an idea of the funding there, with about 52% of our operations being general fund for $51 million, federal's about 34, and non-limited and other are significantly smaller. But so federal's about a third of our operations, and general fund is about half. I have a replacement page on 14. I made a mistake when I first created that. If you have what was handed today, a replacement page to explain on department operations, what was the general fund increase of about $10 million in the governor's budget? I'll pause for a moment if you can locate that. I had an error in a previous page that was in your booklet. So it's entitled number 14 replacement.
Yeah. Thank you.
So there's
a, it's only a one-sided copy.
One-sided.
So you wouldn't mind just inserting that in your book.
In for page 13.
14.
Yeah, but we don't want to pull 14 out.
No, please do not.
13's on the other side. All right.
The idea here is to put in perspective where that $10 million, what comprised that in the increase in the department operations. It is some of the policy option packages, $700,000 for dropout prevention, $3.5 million for low-performing schools, mentor program, about $700,000, and then inflation or cost of living, cost of goods and services was about $1 million. And then the largest piece is phase in and phase outs, the net effect of those, with the phase ins being our technology enhanced assessment system of $6 million and reductions of the database initiative, which you've heard about $900,000, and a reduction in assessment. So that's what has changed from the base budget from last biennium.
Chris, as we go through these budgets, will we be able to identify enhancements? And basically, I guess what I'm looking for, enhancements of existing program, and what amount that might be, and then new programs.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's a very good question. I should have pointed out, under each tab will be a budget for that office. And in that budget is, of course, the summary of the governor's budget, but then it also will include the additions and changes from that are affecting that, the new policy option packages, and if there are any reductions or phase-ins. That will be, you'll be able to identify which programs exactly were affected. The graph on page 15 is to portray by our offices in department operations how they are funded. And you can see the assessment office, this is on page 15, is the largest with general funds activity. And then the largest federal is our Office of Special Education. I have another replacement page because the graphic did not produce pleasingly at all, so I replaced that. It's on page 16. It's the exact same data, but just a little easier to look at. And this is a required report pertaining to what is our span of control, meaning the number of non-supervisors to supervisors. And the governor's recommended budget includes about an 8.5 ratio, and there's a little history of where we have been. At one point, there was a target of 9 being the ideal of span of control, non-supervisors to supervisors.
Sure.
Yes, Representative Schrader.
Can we get some detail about what is a supervisor versus non-supervisor so we know what we're talking about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, the definition that we use to prepare this data is every management service employee, which is every supervisor that's not represented by the union. Every unrepresented manager, of which all managers are, but it's really the union representation versus the management staff.
Chris, is that a statewide norm?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I haven't heard that number for quite a few years, but the last time I heard it, it came from DAS as the target of a 9. And maybe Mr. Fager knows any differently, but I haven't heard that mentioned lately. I don't know if you've heard that in other committees or not, but that was the target.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I'm afraid that I don't have any current information on whether there are guidelines established by DAS for that ratio. I do know that that was of intense interest in the last 10 years and continues to be of interest. It may be that I have to do a little more research and come back with the answer for you.
Could you do that? I'd appreciate it.
Yes, be happy to do that.
I would also think there would be other variables depending upon the activity of the particular organization. You may have it a 9-to-1 in some departments where you may have others where your span would be a little bit. I'm thinking of the state hospital or something like that, or you'd have a different span.
Mm-hmm. So. Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Why perhaps that there is no specific guidance, but there's an indication of overall averages that might indicate whether you're above or below a norm to be a catalyst for discussion on why you might be.
Thank you.
Chris, looking at that page 16, Department of Education span of control, ratio of non to supervisors. Now, does that relate to the department, the employees here in Salem, or that other? I guess I really don't know how many supervisors and non-supervisors you have off-premise.
Mr. Chair, the chart represents data of all department employees, which includes our department operations and the special schools, teachers, staff that maintain the facilities and take care on all the, those type of support functions. So they're all in Salem, but it is not just department operations. We've included special school staffing as well. So we're talking about a total of a little over 500 some employees.
Okay. And of course that has nothing to do with the teachers or supervisors in our school districts, 198 school districts.
It does not. Correct.
Mr. Chair, it would be interesting to note whether or not there were, looking at 97 to 99 and then 99-01, whether you got more efficiency by having a 8 to 4 or whether you were producing more overtime or what was happening, what really drove it to, because you got 11.4 in 97-99, and were there problems that suggested that you need to go to a much smaller ratio?
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Winters, part of the reason for the fluctuation has to do with the Youth Corrections Educational Program. Two biennia ago, we operated the programs and employed all of the staff ourselves. And of course, there was a large number of teachers and few supervisors. Since that time, we have contracted those services out and eliminated almost all of those positions. So that is the reason we're down closer at 8.5, where during 95, 97, 99, I was able to show, not playing with numbers, but the numbers showed that we had a very high ratio, which is, from some perspectives, good because it's many people supervised by one supervisor, where now we're down to a lower. So that's the reason I was able to, not able to, but I used, for the complete picture, the youth corrections, which they had many employees, teachers, versus a few supervisors. So that made that number very high. Now we don't have that any longer. We're down to the lower number. That makes sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It makes sense of what you did and with the figures, but I still, you know, my question is what kinds of problems did it pose when you were at the higher number, even though I know you took out one group and you contracted those out, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I would like to put a word in.
Later.
Okay.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask a clarifying question. Is what you're saying that places McLaren and Hillcrest are now not included, that were included in the 97-99, which made that ratio starkly different because you had one principal to X number of teachers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, that's exactly correct.
Okay.
The graph on page 17 is a history of the department operations FTE, or full-time equivalent staff, with the governor's recommended for 2001-03 at 278, with a increase from last biennium, and then the increase from the biennium before that with the policy option package that were approved by the legislature last session. Graph on page 18 relates to our policy option packages. Of course, these are all general fund. Putting those in perspective with each other, with the largest being what we've referred to as the data integrity package, our pre-kindergarten expansion, the local option for equalization in the state school fund, and our low-performing schools and dropout and teacher mentor and special salary increase for the special schools. On page 19 is the organization chart of the Department of Education with the state board and the superintendent at the top, with the operating offices at the bottom, the five operating offices from whom you will hear of each one of the associate superintendents, and then the in the middle are the state, the support for the State Board of Education and what we call the Office of Educational Support, which provides support to the agency in technology, business, accounting, purchasing, and legal services, and so forth. The budget notes on page 20 were referred to and mentioned. I think you've given some detail yesterday by your staff on the budget notes in the department. We had a multitude of budget notes.
Sure.
Yes, yes, Senator Schroe.
Is there a staff for the State Board of Education? Is that staff independent of the superintendent's staff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, the staff person that is assigned to the State Board is a deputy superintendent for the Department of Education who has dual responsibilities to the superintendent and to the State Board.
I remember at one point there was conscious effort of the legislature to separate that staff, but I think that was a long time ago, and I don't know that that's prevailed. Apparently it hasn't.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, no, but in the hiring there was a collaboration of in the selecting that person to meet the needs of the State Board as well as the superintendent.
That's a good idea.
I'm choosing to, with your permission, to skip the budget notes. I think your staff has covered those. I would say that we have complied with all the budget notes. There's one where we have yet to provide a report, and it relates to the number of schools that have a gun safety program. We have done a recent survey and collecting data, and we'll be reporting on that later. But we've complied with, I believe, all of the budget notes. Your staff will concur with that, rather than going through all of those notes again. Primarily, they were for us to appear before the emergency board for the release of set-asides, reservations.
Mr. Durham?
Yes.
Do I see you on this chart? Where are you on this organizational chart?
I don't think my name makes the chart.
It doesn't make the chart? Okay. You're just one of the workers.
Are you not?
I'm one of those bean counters.
Are you a deputy of some kind?
No, I'm not. Excuse me. My title is Director of Management Services, which includes the business office and purchasing and personnel.
Somehow that doesn't get on this chart. Interesting.
Yeah. I think that... I've included my office under the Office of Educational Support Services where you see all those FTE of 67.
Okay.
I'm one of those 67.
All right, gotcha.
The next report that's been requested is the Affirmative Action Report on page 30, a summary of that. First, under gender representation in the Department of Education, 69% of our employees are women and 31 men. There was an increase of 1% during the reporting period of women. 85 of our employees appointed during the last period, 85 employees appointed during the past period were women. And 45% of our 49% of our managers are women, which exceeds the DAS determined goal. Overall, the department for the reporting period is slightly under the goal of gender representation. People of color, about 6% of our employees represent people of color, and that means 26 staff. 10% of our appointments during the period were of people of color. We need to do additional recruitment efforts to bring that up to the target of 22 below the target for people of color. People of disability, about 7% of our staff represent people with disabilities, and we're slightly below the goal on that category as well, and we need to do additional work. Many of our teachers, or not many, but several of our teachers at the special schools have disabilities, including deafness, and they are instructing children of the deaf, being deaf themselves. I'd like to point out that to address the areas where we need improvement, the department has created a task force to create recommendations for a diverse and quality workforce, and their work has been ongoing for approximately a year, and will be giving the superintendent and his cabinet recommendations for strengthened recruitment and attraction of people with disabilities and various diversities. On page 31...
Chris?
Yes.
Page 30, third paragraph. When you say people of color, what ethnic groups are included in that?
Mr. Chair, it would represent every ethnic group other than white.
Okay.
One of the problems I need to point out in reporting this data is the state employment application no longer requires a person to indicate their race or their disability.
Hmm.
So it's voluntary. So I believe not in the disabilities area, we may have some staff that have some type of disability that we are never aware of that could qualify, but we don't ask, and of course, if they choose not to report, we don't have that data. So I believe our numbers, and probably statewide, are under-reporting, perhaps, in both those categories. It's the applicant's choice.
It's pretty hard for you to meet your goals if you don't have a means of counting.
That's what I maintain.
Yeah.
But it's an optional field.
Okay. Thank you.
Page 31, performance and financial audits. Your staff has given you some audit reports. The two largest ones that we receive in one every year is the statewide audit report of an internal control, which includes review of selected federal grants. We had two small, I call them relatively insignificant findings 2 years ago. Those have been corrected, and I've worked with the U.S. Department of Education and Department of Agriculture to have their files closed on these audits as well as the state. The last audit of that same nature, we had no compliance findings and essentially a clear report. Number two is the Division of Audits performed an audit of the implementation of the database initiative, and they said the department had successfully completed that project and done a good job in that system. They had some recommendations regarding the data that goes into that system, and that's part of the reason why we're proposing that data integrity package that you'll be hearing about later. Page 33 relates to performance measures for the Department of Education. We have three, I would describe, very high-level statewide performance measures. This is a printout of from the database that DAS initiated for recording performance measures. We have three. One relates to the dropout, student dropouts, with the goal to decrease the percent of students dropping out of Oregon public high schools before earning a diploma. And you can see data for the years back to 92. Data for 2000 isn't recorded, but I believe it was a little less than for 99, so it's 6.3 or 4%, I think, is where it ended up for that year. But we have data going back several years, with the goal being a 4-year as the target, 4%, pardon me, 4% target.
That's true.
That's
we have
true. True.
In our other subcommittee dealing with public safety, we heard a report from the Criminal Justice Commission, the Commission on Criminal Justice, and they were actually, I guess it was it was in connection with that budget, but we also heard from with the man who does the benchmarks generally for the
Jeff Trines.
And he made the statement that they were looking for some agency to be the principal agency on the benchmark that they do have about kids carrying weapons to schools, and that there's apparently no principal agency that is responsible for that benchmark. And naturally, your agency came to mind as one that maybe should be the agency that's principally responsible for this benchmark. Have you given any thought about that? Elaine has a comment down there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's interesting you bring that up, because in dealing with the revisions on the report card, one of the questions that at least is supposed to be included in that under the discipline and student behavior is exactly that, the number of discipline be the expulsions for weapons. So I think that the department is planning, they already collected somewhat, but maybe to refine that a little, according to Nancy Heiligman.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to defer the answers to that question till we have Nancy Heiligman. I'm not aware of what we personally collect on that, you know, problem.
But if there's going to be some kind of unified effort to see to it that schools keep kids from bringing weapons to school, somebody has to take the lead.
The next measure, Mr. Chair, is the Oregon School Report Card, with the measure being to increase the number of schools receiving a satisfactory or higher rating. What you see there is for the first year, we had a 96% where schools received satisfactory or greater. To fill in the data for the next year, which is not written there, it moved to 98.3%. We're in the strong, satisfactory, exemplary category, with obviously a goal of getting to 100%. We have a policy option package that is designed or targeted to helping low-performing schools.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Scholl.
I voted against this evaluation process, the report card process, because I thought it might have really adverse effects on the schools, and I didn't think it could be done very accurately or very scientifically. I'm still not convinced that it's done as well as it can be done, but I think you're doing a good job, doing about as good a job as you can do on it. But I do want to say this. I may have been wrong. I think the fact that you have looked at schools and said that most of the schools are at least satisfactory or better has had a positive effect on the attitude of the people about the schools. I think that's true, and I think that's good. I think we get more support for the schools, maybe from the general public, than we had before. So maybe I was wrong. I don't know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, thank you for that. The department is working hard and refining that as we speak to improve it for the next year. But a major effort's gone into the reporting of that, trying to find the best measures.
Chris, I understand that we have a report card on school districts in addition to schools.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
So I don't see that report.
Well, the measure only related to the schools. We don't have a measure that is addressing the districts, but there is a correct, and there is a district. It's a little report bit different card. Than the report card for schools, obviously, because of its.
Yeah. Yes, I think that came up in the other education committee, and I'd never heard of a report card on school districts, but you're telling me we do that?
Mr. Chair, yes. We'll. When Joanne Flint, the Office of Curriculum Instruction, she can be talk to you about that.
I've never heard of that either. Representative Hobson.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, the district report card covers and gives the information of the schools. And again, one of the things with department staff that a small subcommittee is working on under Representative Backlund's committee is to look at that and see if an overall grade is appropriate and looking at figuring those out. If I'm understanding correctly, that isn't part of the benchmarks, if you will, that you set up for this particular, but it is available. And I would certainly concur with almost everything that Senator Trump, I'm not convinced I made a mistake in voting against it, but other than that, no, I think they are doing some real good things with it, and I'm going to be supportive of it.
And finally, the high-level measure we have relates to the database initiative project with the goal of having every district report successfully their data electronically to the department, and we are there. All the districts are successfully reporting, and you'll hear much more about that when you hear the database initiative report from Nancy Heiligman. The last report that I'd like to make has to do with department-owned facilities. Obviously, in the mall here, we don't own the facilities. They belong to the Department of Administrative Services, but we do own the buildings at the School for the Blind and the Deaf and maintain those buildings. If I could refer you to page 96 as a summary.
96.
the school for the deaf, located at in Northeast Salem, has 19 buildings on the property ranging in age of the buildings from 26 years to 87 years.
Yeah.
It's a nice campus. It's a 3-acre. There's a wetland, jogging track area, a football field, school buildings, small grandstand. They have an Olympic-sized swimming pool and several playgrounds. Of the 19 buildings, the attached data is a report on each building. But to summarize those, 15 were rated by our staff as being in good condition, 3 in fair, and 1 in poor condition. And the poor one was a pump house. The school for the blind, located just almost adjacent to the Capitol here, 700 Church Street, there are 11 buildings on that property ranging in age from 30 to 70 years. Those buildings were rated 5 in good condition, 4 in fair, and 2 in poor. As you know, the state has not put a lot of money into facilities in the last years because of the financial burden, and we've been trying to maintain. We put roofs and got money to approve rebuild roofs and so forth, and carpeting and flooring. But the age of those buildings is crying out for a need for additional funding for those properties. We do not at this time have policy option packages. There is money in the budget for regular deferred maintenance, about $700,000, and we're putting that to good use just to maintain, keep the water out of the buildings and facilities livable, because there are children living in these facilities. That concludes what I was planning to present today. The next portion...
Chris,
yes.
A question on your two... on your buildings that you have that are determined to be poor, what are the plans for either their upgrade or, and I understand the deferred maintenance issue, but is there any plan for those buildings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, I'd like to defer that question until we have the director of the schools. She has a 10-year plan, and she could address specifically what we plan to do with those that were in poor condition, and I'm sure they're on the top of the list for maintenance, just to keep the buildings operational. And that'll be coming up a week after next.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Shrum.
In the 93 session of the department, proposed combining the two schools,
yes.
Selling the school for the blind, and sort of reconstituting both campuses at the school for the deaf. It was quite a legislative issue. I think the legislature finally said no to the proposal.
Mr. Chair, the final report we'd like to make today relates to our technology in the Department of Education. This is a required report by your staff. And I'd like to bring up David Reich, who is our Director of Technology and Information Resource Management, to give that report.
Thank you. My name is David Reich, Director of Technology, Department of Education. It's delightful to be before the committee this afternoon to talk about my passion in technology. It's always a challenge to try and find a way to talk about a very complex topic in terms that make it understandable and yet convey the message that you want and make it a riveting presentation. So what we've done is tried to illustrate the thing with a pictures rather than hitting you with a blizzard of words. I've brought along with me today one of my staff persons, Patty Fields Cooper, who's going to help me with this presentation. Patty? What I would like to do is start with July of 1996. Where we were there, and we've broken this into two slides, data about students, which would be this one here, and infrastructure, this one over here. The data about students, the picture of where we were in 1996, we had three major applications, special education child count, the OPTE, or professional technical education system, and the migrant student ID system. Those were data collections that we collected using older systems, and what we did was take a system, put it on a floppy disk, mail it out to our schools and districts, and then the schools and districts ran the system, and it was very difficult for all concerned. So we had this line here represent the link between the systems and the schools and districts, and that was what we call sneaker net in technology, where we send a disk back and forth, fraught with all kinds of problems. We had a paper process up here in the corner for our students to take their assessment tests. We interfaced with our staff, our constituency down here, Department of Human Services, other state agencies and institutions, public, state, and federal reports, in a paper-based communications. We have DSP over here. On the infrastructure, within ODE itself, we had no electronic communications with schools and districts. SFMS, the Statewide Financial Management System, was run off the mainframe at DAS, and we interfaced with DAS from our desktop, so that was good. We ran an old nutrition system on Wang that was purchased in 1984 and was still running in 1996. We produced the school directory, which I'm sure you all have a copy of. That was done on an old FileMaker Pro system, and we kept track of the schools and districts in that system, and then printed that out and then keyed it in to PageMaker and then produced that directory, and that took about 4 to 6 months. Down here, we communicate with the general public and the private schools, and that was a paper-based system. So that's where we were in 1996. The servers...
Yes. Excuse me.
I hate to interrupt, but I have to say that what you see illustrated there is exactly as it was. There were no connections, no lines, no communication.
I understand you experienced
very good.
In 1996, the department had one server that was a mail server, and it was on a card table, and we cleared that off at lunch and played cards on it. If you would, Patty, slides up.
I'm sorry. The other one's
dead. Now, this is where we are today. I've asked Patty to leave the other older ones up here so you can refer to them and see where the contrast is. Let me start, first of all, with an overview of what's actually on these charts. The green and yellow colors represent the phase three of the database initiative, and it is, you'll hear more about that as we go through in making our presentations from Nancy Holligman later on in the next week. The blue up here, and I think it will be somewhere else, represents the data infection insurance package that Dr. Pro asked about earlier, and when we talk about that, you can refer to this diagram and see where we are in the process. This really amounts to our strategic plan. Now, I have a strategic plan in text form, and I have a business plan, of course, but if you can look at this diagram, you can see where it fits into the whole picture. Now, let me explain some of the things that we've done. The school directory is produced out of this institutional database.
Now, anything that has a solid line around it is something that already exists and we put in place. If it's a dotted line, that's part of our plan, and it's either something the department's going to pay for, something that's included in one of the policy option packages or one of the essential packages as we move through it, and that's how you can tell how the plan hangs together. Right now, the school directory is a report that is printed off the institutional database and taking literally just minutes instead of 6 months. This year, we're going to start collecting the data for that electronically directly from the school district, so the entire process will be an electronic process. Now, the institutional database is something the department paid for out of our own operating budget. The institutional database was key to technology for the department because all of the schools and districts are in there and they're uniquely identified so that every office in the department uses that same number for all of our schools and districts, an identifying number, so that JFK High School is the same JF High School that CIFS and Student Services and OPTE, Migrant Ed, every office uses so that we can talk to each other within the department. The data flow, and these are flows, electronic flows of information. They are not paper. We've gone completely electronic. We now send information to Chris Durham's shop, the budget. The budget interacts with SFMS. We are going to build, you can see from the dotted line there, automated SFMS reports and budget projection management systems. Those are on the drawing board and in our strategic and business plan to be completed. Same with budget tracking, out of budget, and so on. You can see down here some internal communications and some automated forms processing that are part of the database initiative that we'll talk to you about later in the week, as I referred to. Also, data dictionary. These are all electronic interfaces happening right now. Over here on this side, and these are separate from that, in that these flows flow through to schools and districts, to private, public, and private enterprise, and to private schools down here. We have some flow throughs right here. What you see right here is the nutrition system. The nutrition system was our Y2K project. It was a $700,000 project, which we took before the JLC IMP and was approved. It's all federal money. Someone asked earlier, I think it was Representative Winters, about the nutrition program. That system disperses $93 million and has 609 sponsors. It's completely web-enabled and it's paperless. The sponsors sit down and submit their information into that system. We got it done in October of 1999, just in time for 2000. And they're putting some minor enhancements in it now, but that is federally funded program. Finance, right here, this is a system that we need to put in place. It's a critical system. You're going to hear more about that. This is the system that disperses the school, basic school support, the $4.8 billion. Okay, over on this chart here, this connection here with the schools and districts, this was upgraded to T1 line through Senate Bill 622, which put a T1 line in every school in the state, and I'm very pleased to announce that has been accomplished. There's also now a LAN meeting basic standards in every school in the state, and that was a $50 million worth of technology money that went in over the last two calendar years, or is going in. So this line here then represents our web link down to schools and districts. Now, CRUD is a key term that means create, read, update, and delete. It's not a qualitative term. Okay? It means that school districts can now, and you can see that this is a dotted line. We are building this system here with money from the TESA project that was awarded to us by the e-board last June. This system will enable us to deliver the electronic tests down here in this box. I was at a meeting this morning of 40 IT directors from around the state, and the enthusiasm and excitement about delivering the assessment test electronically is overwhelming. But you'll hear more about that from Wayne Neuberger when he makes his presentation. Now, during the phase-in period up here, you have the EDS contractor, and that's the contractor who works to deliver the paper tests over here to our kids out there. Those results will need to be merged here in a database that we haven't built yet. That'll be a TESA database. That will put that into an assessment database here, which has a lot more work to do on it. And what makes that merging and everything possible is this data collection process down here, and that's simply where you collect the information about the student who's going to take the test. So the student is going to take their math test. We create a record here which has the student's name in it, the school that they're in, the grade they're in, and it's 12 or 15 items. And then that system, that information becomes available to TESA, so when the student sits down, the TESA knows who that person is. And then we can match it up with the paper test. The student may wind up during this transition period taking a paper test and an electronic test even in the same year. So that's how we'll manage to connect them together right there. So we're utilizing the 622 network already to deliver TESA and to communicate to the schools and districts. Now we have an electronic line here to our systems. We're not anymore collecting the special education child count data in a runtime method. We're now collecting that over the web, live, real time, and we built that system with EI administrative dollars. The dotted line around there, which is green, represents more work we need to do to put these systems together in an even more integrated fashion, so that they become more seamless and we get better quality of our data. You can see the DBI project down here, very high profile, highly successful implementation that the department has done. You can see the enhancements behind there, which you'll hear about from Nancy Heiligman later on as well when she presents, she and I present on the 26th, I believe. And then you can see the electronic interface now to public, state, federal, and other state agencies. We are anticipating, I've been in talks with DHS, so that we'll be able to get information from DHS about Medicaid and other items that will be helpful for us in the school administration. So this is now a web-enabled presentation to the internet down here. So we are very much in keeping with the two internet bills, which require us to post our reports, public reports, to the internet. We're already doing that. We're ahead of the curve on that one. The importance of tying these together is so that we can provide better quality data to our schools and districts, and we allow them to get in. We even have them up here. We're going to provide what's called an extranet, which we're working on. We have an extranet now. We need to do some work on that. But that will allow private, secure transmission to the schools and districts of an operational, technical nature, almost business-to-business kind of relationship. The report card came up and was discussed. It's right down here. It has an electronic interface to DBI. It also has an electronic interface to assessment, where we get the assessment scores and that kind of information. So what I've tried to do is give you a picture here that you can use to refer to as these data projects and other projects and efforts the department have referred to. You can see how they fit into what is really our master strategic plan, and you have the objectives and the goals in your packet there, but this is how you can visually map to those. With that, I'll conclude my presentation.
Yes. David, do other states have similar arrangements as we're developing here?
Chair Senator Hartung, could you elaborate on arrangements? What are you referring to?
What you just explained to us, the infrastructure and the...
Oh, yes.
They do. And so there is a history of success out there for some states doing it. I mean, since I know so little about the Internet and the web and the computers, I embarrass myself by asking questions I should know something about.
Senator Hartung, the department is in many ways ahead of a lot of states. We have a lot of states coming to us asking us, how did you handle the problem of institutions? Because there's a problem with what's an institution, what's a program, and then you have an institution representing multiple programs, and you have private alternatives, you have public alternatives, you have private institutions, and when you start getting into it, as I said, it gets very complex, and the decisions you make affect outcomes down the line in terms of how the department works within itself with each other. In other words, if you're giving them basic school support, you look at them one way. If you're administering a program like special education, you look at them a different way. Even if I was administering Senate Bill 622, I had to look at them another way. That was from a physical standpoint rather than a program or other. So it gets quite complex, and I'm very excited and proud to say that I think we've come very close to solving that problem here in Oregon. So in many senses, we're ahead. We were a leader with DBI. I think we were a leader with the institutional database. We're a leader with the nutrition system, and that the contractor who developed our nutrition system has now rolled it out to over 20 states and used that same technology and web kind of enablement. But your question about do all the states look this way, the infrastructure slide that's one that's difficult to build because it's how you operate, and the efficiencies you gain in your day-to-day operations really depend on how well you implement the technology in your own backyard. It's one of those things that if it works well, nobody notices, but if you have a problem, then it's a disaster and really causes some... So it's, the best thing is for the technology to work in the background and solve your problems. The PCS vets, if I could refer to that right here, and the private school registration systems down there, the department was able to save FDE, actually, and reinvest it in better service because those systems that we created solved so many problems for internally providing those services to the PCS vets schools. And we did the same thing with pupil transportation. We provide better service to the districts and schools now through technology because we invested in those systems.
Well, one of my goals or my vision for K through 12 is to, be able to test and assess each one of our children each year. And that's kind of what the new administration wants, annual testing. So, are you heading in that direction where you'll be able to pull this system up to the point where, and I know Wayne Neuberger will tell us more about it, but I mean, you must have talked to him about this, if that's a goal to be able to test annually, for instance?
Senator Hartung, I've of course worked very closely with Wayne on the acquisition of the TESA system, and it's really a policy decision about whether you want to test every year or not, because the system is capable of doing that. The TESA system, you can test the kid as many times as necessary during the year, and then you could test at other grades. It's just merely it's a policy decision. Do we want to invest the resources in that? There would also be, I'm sure Wayne would tell you, some additional cost for more test items, because the more often you test, then the more questions you need. But I should probably stop at that point
Sure.
I get out of my area.
Senator Trone and then Representative Hobson.
Will the $10 million in the budget sort of complete this system? Is it an ongoing process of building the system?
Senator Hartung, Senator Trow, yes. What we did with the, when we built the DBI, is we took care of collecting the data and getting it in. Then, as the audit pointed out, the data is only as good as the resources available to collect it within the schools. So the 10.5 million goes towards improving that data. That's why we went with the data assurance, although people have asked us, what does that mean? But we're trying to ensure the quality of the data that comes into the system. We've got a real first-class system here, and the only thing that we can do to really improve the quality of the data is to go down to the schools and help them out.
So that's what you will be doing with this money, is helping the schools know how to put the data into the system and making sure they're conscientious about putting it all in and this kind of thing.
Senator Hartung, Senator Trow, actually, yes, the 10.5 million sets up a standards and certification process that the money is paid to the schools on an ADMW basis, and then the data is collected through data centers that have to meet standards, and that would be set by a panel, cooperative panel between the districts, the data centers, and the ODE, so that then everybody is using the same standards, collecting the data the same way, and so on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have three comments, if I might. I think the department is being somewhat modest in response to the question, do other states look like this? I think it would be safe to say other states wish they looked like this. And my second comment is in regard to the testing and the papers. I know in our little school district of 2,200 kids, we filled a room with boxes of different levels of tests. It was a total nightmare. I can't conceive of what they did in Portland. They must have had a warehouse with trucks, and I'm not kidding. My last one is hearing them talk about the floppy disks. I still remember, and this has not been too long ago, sending over the information on a floppy disk to the Department of Education, and unfortunately our principal got in a wreck. Those are the kinds of things that happened that made it so we got the directory in February when the year was half over and you already had the ones you wanted to call scribbled down. So this is absolutely fabulous. And I've always been an ardent supporter, but this is why it's coming to fruition, and I really commend all of you on this.
Representative, you don't see this system as developing all the paper that you used to have for test taking?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. They're replacing all the paper?
Yes.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yes. There will be, and in fact, I would say, Mr. Chair, in response to the question of yearly, I can't imagine that we won't have yearly, and in some cases, they'll have a Tessa computer in the back of the room, and you're ready to take the test. You've accomplished all the parts and go back there and take it.
Mm-hmm.
Won't be a big deal.
Okay, that sounds encouraging. We'll watch it closely.
Thank you.
What's next, Chris? Or are you done?
Mr. Chair, that concludes what we plan to present today with.
Okay.
Next Monday, we're going to come at you with some policy option packages.
Okay. Do the members have any questions about what we're doing? I think we're on schedule, a little ahead of schedule. If there's no other business
no other business to come before the committee, we are adjourned.